Right. Good morning. Welcome. Welcome for those watching online, which is probably a lot of people, because like every time my phone, I get a text, it's somebody sick, pray for me. So there's lots. So I hope you'll look around and just make an assumption there's people missing because of sickness. You're not seeing some people here, and just pray for them this week, because there's just nothing worse than being sick and you got all this stuff to do around Christmas time. So please just let's remember to pray for one another during this season. So we had a couple of weeks in between where we took communion together and we looked at Philippians 2. And then last week, man, that was wonderful, having the kids and doing Jingle Jam, and I appreciate Missy leading that. And so really, like, this is week two of a Christmas series, and next week is Christmas Eve. It's just a weird year, okay? It's a weird year. So we've been talking about this idea of the King of Kings, and remember we said that the story of Jesus does not begin at Christmas, but eternity past. Or we talked about the time before time. That's why John 1 says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And so John 1:14, and I want to reference, and then we're going to go into Matthew chapter 2, is now the Word became flesh and took up residence among us. The Word became flesh and took up residence among us. The word there is how the Hebrew people would have heard, the Jewish people would have heard, he tabernacled among us. That was the picture, that he moved into the neighborhood and he lived among us, okay? So the one who is eternal, remember this is a couple weeks ago, he's eternal, he's creator, he is fully God, he is life and light, he came here. He took on flesh and blood and came here. And that was all for a purpose and all for a reason. And that is what the King of Kings did. So what I would like to look at today is this whole idea that he came here, he came among us, the Word became flesh, is look at the idea that only God could take a manger and make it a throne. And the people who recognize that the most, we're told that Matthew tells us about this group. And it's amazing what people think they know about the wise men, the magi, we three kings of Orientar. I'm not sure where Orientar is. Are you? I can't find it on the map. Siri, where's Orientar? You know, we just have all these phrases, right, that tell us things that do they really tell us? So probably I wouldn't normally do this. I want to read the entire section of Scripture from Matthew 2 so you can actually see what's there and not there. Okay, and then we're going to dive into that, because these are the individuals who came because he was a king. That's why they came. They didn't come for any other reason. A king is born, we need to go, and we need to worship him. That was their whole thinking. And so they traveled to do that. But that's the group of people who did that. That's what their purpose was. That's why they came. And perhaps they can help us understand something about understanding the manger throne and worshiping the King of Kings as the Word that became flesh and lived among us. So here we go. Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. And just kind of follow along, and I'm going to read this. I might stop along the way. We'll see. Just so that we understand all that Matthew wants to tell us about this. So after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, that's really important. It says after. So all our nativity scenes are wrong where we put them at, right? It's after that in Judea in the time of King Herod. And why do all these people do this? Do you know why? Because they want us to understand the setting. They want us to understand this is not like you're reading a story as in a fairy tale. Long ago in a land far away. This is all detail. So we go, oh, this really happened. We're reading a historical account. We're reading something that really happened, because it's one of the ways the enemy attacks. Oh, come on. That's a story. It's a nice story, but it's a story. No, look at the detail. We're told there was a king, King Herod. Wise men from the east came to Jerusalem. So we're told specifically, here's these wise men, they came from the east, they came to Jerusalem, which makes total sense. You go to the capital of a nation, the head place, the major city. Why? You're looking for the king. So they're going to go to King Herod's place because there's the king, there's the capital, there's his palace. We obviously need to go there. Saying, where is the one who is born King of the Jews? For we saw his star, and this is really important, when it rose, and have come to worship him. We saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him. We have a specific purpose why we are coming. Then says what? When King Herod heard this, he was alarmed, and all Jerusalem with him. Of course, all Jerusalem was alarmed. Herod was a crazy person. As you're going to see after this story, if you kept reading, you would see what he does. Okay, he does not come to worship. Okay, he comes to eliminate. He now believes there's a threat to his kingdom. There's another king. I must do something about that. So, of course, the whole city is alarmed. So, after assembling, because Herod's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know anything about this. So he calls together the people who do, the men who know the scriptures. He assembles the chief priests, the experts in the law. When it says experts in the law, that's what it means. The first five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch, those people, all the chief priests, experts in the law, and he asks where the Christ was to be born. Hey, guys, do you know anything about this? I know nothing about this. And so they do what? They actually know the scriptures, and so they go back to the book, our book of Micah. And they say what? In Bethlehem of Judea, they said, for it is written this way by the prophet. And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are in no way least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. That's what they did. They just went back and said, right here, go to Bethlehem. Okay? So that's what they tell him. Herod privately summoned the wise men, determined from them when the star had appeared, and he sent them to Bethlehem, and he said, go and look carefully for the child. And when you find him, inform me so I can go and worship him as well, right? Because he's trying to con them. You got to tell me. I really want to go and worship. No, I really want to go eliminate this. I'm the king. All my kids are going to be successors to the throne, not anybody else. And so he pretends he wants to worship, but that's really not why he's there. So after listening to the king, they left. And once again, the star, when they saw it, when it rose, they led until it stopped above the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they shouted joyfully. They shouted joyfully. And they came into the house, right? They're not in a manger anymore, right? They're not in a stable. They came into the house and saw the child with Mary, his mother. They bowed down and they worshiped him. And they opened their treasure boxes and they gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they went back by another route to their own country. So I want to just talk about these individuals. A lot of the things that we believe we know about these individuals is outside of the scope of Scripture. Now, if I do that this morning, I will try to give you warning signs that I'm going to bring in some other historical place who says something that I think is interesting. I will do my best to just stick to the text and what we're told about these individuals and their gifts, and ultimately, why did they come? That's really the purpose this morning. Don't miss the end. Why they came, and do we have that same heart this morning when we come to Jesus? And that is to worship him. So who were these men, right? Magi, kings, right? We have all these things. Everybody wants to dress them up and have them on camels and do all this stuff. We know some things, okay? In other words, if you look in Jeremiah chapter 39, it actually names a wise man who was one of Nebuchadnezzar's assistants, one of his wise men who would speak to them, okay? In Daniel chapter 2, we know that Daniel is among the wise men after he proved himself, okay? And the king has a dream. And he calls all the wise men together, and he's like, tell me what my dream means. And they're like, okay, king, tell us your dream. Nope. If you're a really wise man, you're going to tell me my dream, and then you're going to tell me what it means. And they're like, no, we can't do that. Nobody can do that. And so he's going to wipe them all out. He's just going to kill all the wise men, right? That's just Nebuchadnezzar. Until Daniel walks in, and he says, God can tell you your dream. God can tell you your dream. And this is really pivotal what happens. God tells Daniel. Daniel tells the king. And Daniel is put in charge of the wise men. He's put in charge of them. He just like gets a promotion instantly. Okay, you're in charge. And so here's what I need you to understand. When Daniel got that, Okay. In other words, they're like, Daniel, you got a promotion today. You're in charge. Daniel didn't look and say, okay, can somebody hand me the handbook? How do you run the Wise Men's Association, right? How do I do that? Is there a Robert's Rules of Orders for how you hold a wise man meeting? Okay. I don't know if I know all about Babylon to know what we're supposed to know. He didn't do that. This is what you need to know. That God puts people places, and he does so for a reason. So when he put Daniel there, Daniel didn't say, okay, I guess I better learn the ways of the Babylonians. Oh, hey guys, let me tune you in on who God is. Let me help you understand who God is. And Daniel could have told them some things. Now, let me go outside the scope of scripture for a moment. Daniel could have told them things like the rabbis say. The rabbis believe that while Adam named all the animals, that was his job, that Seth, this is the son born to them after Cain murders Abel, that Seth named the stars, that God gave him that. Because if you look in the book of Job, we have constellations being named. And it's like, where'd that come from? Well, step outside for a moment, and the rabbis believe that that was his job. That's what he did. He was the first astronomer, and God gave him that assignment to do that. So just take that knowledge for a moment. Let's for a moment assume that's true. That's what Daniel told them. You guys are looking up for all the wrong reasons, guys. You think you can determine the fate? No. Those stars up there, they point to the Creator. They tell us the story of who God is. And he would have explained all of this to them so they had a total different knowledge. Do you understand you are in the place you are with the influence you have in your workplace, in your home, in schools, because God has you there for a reason and a purpose to use you. Not to just go by the system of the world, but to bring him into that place. And that gets very hard. We can all acknowledge that. That gets hard. That gets difficult. That weighs on us at times. But I want you to understand, you are where you are because God has determined he wants you there. And he has a purpose and a reason for you there. And Daniel understood that. If you read Jeremiah 29, we're used to 29:11, for I know the plans I have for you. There's something even greater in that text. And that is, they were given an assignment. When you go to Babylon, sit down, cross your arms, and be mad the whole 70 years you're there. Nope. No, that's not what they're told. They were told what? Go there. Build houses, plant, have your kids get married, have grandkids, right? Do all these things, okay? Have jobs, take influence, and guess what? It's amazing, but what can happen when somebody actually listens to God? It's absolutely amazing, isn't it? And that's what he did. Jeremiah spoke those words from God. Daniel's like, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do. Okay, not be mad about I'm not in my hometown anymore, not be mad because I'm in exile, but say God has a purpose for me here. So when you look at the wise men, okay, when you look at them, we understand something about them, this idea I believe that Daniel helped them understood everything that was going to happen, everything that was going on, so that they would come and they would worship him. Why would they come? Okay? Because I think Daniel told them something else. When you read the book of Daniel, you see some incredible things that Daniel was able to see and experience. And he would have shared that with them. Okay? So understand this. So know and understand. This is Daniel, and I'll get to the reference in a moment. So know and understand from the issuing of the command to the restore and rebuild of Jerusalem until the anointed one, a prince, arrives. And Daniel gives them this time frame that he's told by God. And so guess what they're doing? They are looking up for what might be a sign that what Daniel saw, what Daniel experienced, was actually going to happen. Isn't that amazing? That amazing? Historically, Marco Polo, which we only know that name when we're playing the game in the pool, right? I think that's the only time we know him. Okay, we are terrible at history, folks, okay? We are terrible, and we don't understand that. That weighs on everything else. Marco Polo says when he arrived in what is modern-day Iran, at that point it was the nation of Persia, he saw in gold the tombs of the wise men that came to worship Jesus. We have an historical record about that. We have no idea that that exists today or anything. But he said he saw that. They told him, you have to see this place. Okay? Because of what they did. Because of what thing they carried out. That he was told, come here. You've got to see this place. You got to see this tomb. Because of who he is. Again, historically, there is just so much that helps us understand more about this story. So why these gifts? Why these gifts? Did you ever know when Isaiah talks about that all the merchants of Sheba will come bringing gold and incense? And one of the translations talks about frankincense. So there's like a prophecy in Isaiah about when Messiah comes, because there's lots in Isaiah about Messiah, that people come and offer him gifts. The early church fathers said that the gold was for a king, frankincense was for a priest, myrrh was for a man who was a mortal, but a priest for who was God, who was born to die. That's how they looked at the gifts that were brought, okay? Now frankincense is an essential oil. I have no idea what that's for, okay? So don't confuse that. They came and did that. And I love the translation because it's picking up what happened. Sometimes they showed up with a gold bar, right? A little container of something. They had treasure boxes, whether it was on their horse, on their camels. They brought in boxes to lay those gifts and offer to them. And a lot of people believed that right after that, when they had to depart and leave and go to Egypt, guess what funded that trip? The gold that the wise men brought. Isn't that amazing? God's like, oh, I'm going to provide for you. Yeah, Herod's going to go crazy here, okay? Herod's going to go crazy. I'm going to provide for you, okay? And these guys come in, and how are we going to make this? Oh, that's how God. I'm just telling you, it's an amazing story when you look at it in that context and to see what God is doing in the midst of everything. So the real question, and this is where I want to focus the last little bit of our time together this morning, is how will you respond to the king? How will you respond to the king? Because there is a response here, okay? There is a response. The word picture, okay, of worship, it's not used very often in the New Testament, but it's the idea that they bowed. And the word actually means, if you break it apart, to kiss the ground. That's what they did in front of Jesus. They bowed in whatever royal garb you want to say they had on, whatever fancy clothing, they got down on their knees and bowed before him in an utter response to the King of Kings. They looked and said, man, if Daniel's right, and there's his star, and we can talk about the star. Everybody has their own opinion about the star. I think that one of the key words there is it rose, okay? Stars don't rise. They appear in the sky. They are fixed. And so when a lot of the people talk about you can back up the night sky, the order of God is amazing. Do you know we can tell what the night sky looked like around the time Jesus was born. If we look at this time, place, where King Herod was, when he killed the babies in Jerusalem, we know these things historically. We can look up and we can say, oh, it was during this time. That we can back up the night sky and we can look up. And they talk about some very interesting things were happening in the skies in those days. That again, because Daniel told them, stop thinking the fates are up there. See, that's what we've done to the stars. We turned them into the daily horoscope, okay, that's available online. They'll go to your inbox. It used to be in the paper, but who gets the paper anymore, right? They'll come there and say, oh, you were born in this month. No. Daniel's probably like, no, guys, stop. There is a God who created all of that. He created all of it. And he orchestrated it all at the beginning of creation, that in the fullness of time when his son was born, things would line up perfectly for those guys to say, oh my, something's happening. Something is taking place. My goodness, could this be what Daniel's talking about? When the Son of Man comes, from the time it's rebuilt to the time he shows up, could it be that time? It's got to be. Let's go to Jerusalem. That's all they knew. Okay, Daniel was from there. Let's go back. And they get orders and they go, and now they worship him. They do the only thing they know how to do for a king, and that is to get the most precious things they have, and they give them to him, and they bow before him. Doesn't look that way in our day. Probably not as much. But Paul said these words. I wonder if this is what it looks like in 2023 to respond to the King of Kings, if we would take Paul's words and say, perhaps this is what I have to offer, King. Therefore, I exhort you, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a sacrifice, alive, holy, and pleasing to God, which is your reasonable service. Some of your translations will pick up the word worship, because that word is where we get our word liturgy from, our order, our service to God. He said, you know what it looks like today? Stop thinking about, do I have gold? Do I have gold to give him, right? Do I have frankincense and myrrh, right? That's not, just not in our cupboard, okay? Stop. Don't think that way. Think what Paul said. Why don't you offer yourself to God as a living sacrifice and say, God, you have all of me. Whatever you want me to do. When Isaiah saw the glory of God, what did he say to do? Here am I, send me. He offered himself and his entire self, whatever you want me to do, I will do. Perhaps that's what it looks like in this day, to come before the King of Kings, who is the word become flesh among us, and say, I give you everything that I am. Everything that I am. This is the only reasonable thing I could do for the King of Kings, is to come and lay before you my entire life and offer myself to you. Perhaps that would be a better way to approach this story and the idea of the King of Kings if we would do that. So the only response to the King of Kings is to worship. That's the only response. It's the only response we have. That's the only response that we have, is that idea that I give my entire self to him. When you think about however many there were, some traditions say 3, some say 12, how many you think they were? They made that journey because of who he was, because of who Daniel said was coming, because what they saw in the sky. And they got together the most valuable things that they could offer a king and made the trip and laid them down before him, bowed down before him and said, it's all yours. It is all yours. And they go back. Again, if we believe that the tradition of Marco Polo is so celebrated for their journey and the worship of the king, who knows how many they told? Who knows how many they told? You think about it. John says, right before he tells us that the word became flesh, he tells us what? He came to his own, and his own didn't receive him. The first people to acknowledge that he is the King of Kings are Gentiles from the east and from Persia. It wasn't even their own people. I'm sure Herod was like, star? Did anybody see a star? I didn't see a star anywhere, right? They're just lost. They're all stuck in their own little world, in their own little system, in their own little time. They're missing what God is showing them. They're missing what he's doing. By the way, read Genesis 1:14 sometime, where it says that God put everything in the sky to mark seasons and to give us signs, to tell us that he already did that at the beginning of creation. He just put it all in order and all in rhythm. And the people who listen. I mean, just think about nowadays. There's probably close to 500 years between Daniel being put in charge of the wise men to them coming. 500 years. Go 500 years in the past. You think we listen to almost anything anybody has said 500 years ago? Right? What is our response? 500 years ago? You guys didn't even have cell phones, okay? How smart could you really be? You didn't have a computer. You didn't have GPS. How smart could you be? That's what we do nowadays. We look back and we, how could you know anything? I'll tell you what they did know. They did know that the King of Kings was coming. They saw Daniel display this in their whole life. They looked and they said, nobody can tell somebody what their dream is. Only God could do that. And they watched Daniel and they're like, who are you? Oh, it's not about me, guys. It's about him. Let me show you. And he told those people, and they come 500 years later, because 500 years before that, some great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, who was a wise man at that point, said if it ever comes your time, and you see what God is doing, go. And they came and they worshiped him. I'm telling you, our only response this morning to the King of Kings has to be worship, has to be the laying down of our life, has to be the what could I possibly hold back. The Magi help us understand something. Paul's words that were the early church's creed, that every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. See, they got to be one of the first ones to let their knees bow and their tongue confess this is the King of Kings, and show it with their treasures and show it by the posture they took. Sometimes we make worship about, is our favorite song playing, okay? They didn't go in there singing We Three Kings of Orient Are, okay? I just guarantee you that, okay? Okay, it's not about the singing, okay? It is about what am I willing to offer the King? That looks far different than can we sing my favorite song on my favorite instruments during a certain season, right? That looks far different. So I'm going to encourage you this morning that as we sing together, that's one of the things we do to worship. We give together. That's how we worship, okay? And man, what God has done this year, because so many of you have just chosen to do that, to offer what you have to the King, has been absolutely amazing. It's allowed us to do so many incredible things. That this is an opportunity to give yourself fully to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. I know it's really hard this season, because this season just pulls us every which direction. The kind of we get out of it and we're like, is it over already? What happens? And we just get busy. Could you for a moment slow down enough to say the King of Kings and Lord of Lords has come, will come again, and the only thing I need to give him is my entire self as a holy sacrifice to him. That's the only reasonable thing I can do for the King of Kings. So as we bow our heads and close our eyes this morning, would you just offer that to the King? Isaiah's words, here am I. Whatever you want me to do. Samuel started that. When Eli finally said, just go back and ask him, what do you want, Lord? Here am I. Here am I. Whatever you want me to do. Jesus, we are amazed. Forgive us when we take what is incredible in your word and we just make it a folk story and add some songs to it and we just miss what it's all about. These men, however many there were, these non-Jewish people, were spoken into years before by a man who chose that instead of wallowing in a place he didn't want to be, he could actually be used in that place. And Father, that's hard. That's hard. For anybody listening this morning, that's hard. Some of us are in places we don't want to be. And we grumble and complain and fold our arms and yet you say, oh, if you would just let me use you there, something amazing could happen. The posture of Daniel allows these men to be taught and to ultimately come. Would we see, Father, the place we're at as the place where you've put us? Jesus, the only response is what Paul said, to offer ourselves as a living sacrifice, to say, here I am. Whatever it is you want me to do, I am yours. And I pray, Father, that would be our response to you this morning. Whatever you have for us. There is nothing to fear in doing that. You provide. You have a plan and a purpose. You have the most incredible things in store for us. So, Father, we come now, and we're going to sing together as an act of worship to you, and we give everything we have. You are the only King, and we worship you for who you are, what you've done, and what you continue to do in our lives. And looking up, because one day you will come again. Jesus, thank you for your work through the ages that allows us to be here today to sing your praises and to worship you. Jesus, we thank you. We love you. We offer our lives to you. We pray all this in your name.